Welcome to Reconsider. I'm Bill Hartman. This is the podcast to challenge you to ask better questions, to look beyond traditional models of thinking and arrive at better health and fitness solutions.
People tend to have a hard time distinguishing between wide and narrow when it comes to their clients, when it comes to themselves. And I think a lot of that is because people don't have enough exposure to measuring the proper way. People are confused by anterior, posterior compression, flattening someone out so that they might appear wider than they actually are structurally. And, you know, a lot of people who have had exposure to this model for a long time also have some problems with it. I think a lot of it comes from people second guessing themselves, not wanting to make the wrong choices. And I think before we get into identifying things, I want to let everyone know that it's okay. Even if you were to say treat a narrow as a wide, as long as you're using activities and safe to fail experiments, it just won't work. You're not going to hurt somebody.
Right.
If you expect to do something to create expansion somewhere and improve internal rotation somewhere or a straight leg raise or a toe touch, and then you do an activity and it doesn't work, then that's the extent of the negative effect you're going to have if you make the wrong choice.
Well, but here's the thing about that is if you are uncertain, intervene based on your best estimate. And this is how you'll learn, because you're going to understand that these are behavioral responses based on constraints.
Yes.
So in intervening, you will learn, and then you work backwards from that. And it's like, oh, this is a response that I would expect from a narrow ISA. This is a response that I would expect from a wide ISA. And then you start to make the associations. And then that's the exposures. It's not laying your hands on somebody and magically being perfect with your ability to determine archetype. Like most people think. Most people think that, oh, all I have to do is lay my hands on this and then I'll know exactly what to do. And there's two videos posted, right, that basically show the execution of measurement.
Sure.
And people need to recognize the fact that while we refer to it as an angle, we're not measuring an angle per se. We're measuring a behavior where this thing turns outward into ER, closes into IR, and then it's the limitation of these behaviors that we're actually determining because of the structural bias creates these limitations, where a wide ISA archetype cannot close the angle, the infrasternal angle, like a narrow does, and a narrow doesn't open like a wide does. And like these are these behaviors, and it's kind of like you mentioned, but just a second ago, take a narrow ISA, but superimpose a progressive degree of anterior posterior compression from the superficial muscle activity. And if you literally bend an ISA flat, it has to spread out sideways. And I think that's probably the greatest measure of confusion. And we've actually got a pretty famous representation of this that'll kind of point to this and clarify it to a degree. But again, that's for the people that are falling into this perception of a two-dimensional representation, because there are examples of this as a two-dimensional representation in a I know there's at least one textbook that would refer to it as a two-dimensional representation, and then there's two others that make reference to it without a frame of reference as to behavior.
Yeah. So you got your wides and your narrows, which are behaviors. Like the infrasternal angle is a behavior. When you're measuring it, you're measuring a behavior. And what you're looking for is an open angle that is a hard time closing, which would be a wide.
So these are turns. So when we say behaviors, we're talking about actual turning that is taking place. So it's not this like a bellows would be, right? These are turns. So it actually, as it opens, we have an increase in external rotation of the lower rib cage. And as it closes, we have this internal rotation of the lower rib cage. So this is what we have. This is what we're like. We're literally watching ERs and IRs take place. Yeah. And again, it's not this again hinged kind of a hinge representation. Like so I always picture a bellow. You know, I don't even know if anybody knows what a bellows is anymore.
There's going to be a lot of visual representation. So if you are listening, if you typically listen to this on Spotify or Apple Music, head over to the YouTube.
Yeah, Bill, please go to YouTube because we have videos.
Bill and I are going to be showing pictures and making a lot of visual representations with our bodies and arms and stuff. So Bill was just making angles with his hands and arms. And you're putting your arms out in front of you like I'm doing is actually a pretty great representation of your rib cage. And then as it moves, you get your arms moving and your hands moving together. So it isn't a straight plane hinge and sort of pivot.
In fact, there's a shape change within the ribs themselves. So if we were looking at take the narrowest of narrows and the widest of wides. That's what we talk about when we're talking about comparison. So it's easier to see. But if you had the narrowest of narrows, the ribs are actually the anterior portion of the rib that you would see on the front of the rib cage is actually a straighter rib. And then when you're so like if you just put your hands in parallel and you straighten your fingers, that's going to be more of the narrow ISA representation. And then when you look at a wide, it's like, okay, if you clawed your hands, that's actually the bending that's taking place in the ribs that contributes. It's not the only thing that produces the compensatory ER that we would see in, say, a wide ISA, but it does provide you a useful representation of the bending of the rib cage that creates this wider representation.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get into, we talked about behavior. Let's get into the typical behaviors and tendencies. So we had already mentioned wides are more of an open position that has a harder time closing. And then your narrows are in a more closed position that's going to have a harder time opening when you're measuring them.
Right. And if we talk about this in ERs and IRs, you have a compensatory ER in the wide ISA. You have a compensatory IR in the narrow ISA. And this is due to the superficial muscle activity that's influencing breathing. Actually, this is a breathing based compensatory strategy based on the degree of the differential constraints between the narrowest of narrow and the widest of wides.
Right. So you have, if we use our Chinese finger trap as a model, you have your elongated, so Bill's got it on screen. You have your elongated narrow.
Yes.
Narrow helical angles. You have a wide stout. So you have one, which might be someone that's considered lanky, someone that's considered, you know, someone that's been called lurch. I wouldn't know. No, I don't, you know, no one's ever called me lurch in my athletic career, maybe. and then you have your wide stout, you got your endurance runners, you got your farm boys who bale hay, like you're going to have those sort of archetypes for you.
You can go back into, I think my copy is from 1952 and it would be, Body Mechanics by Goldthwait. And so, and it's an old book. It's like, I don't suggest that you necessarily seek it out. I just want to know that I want everybody to know that like looking at structure is not new. The osteopaths have been looking at it for, you know, over 100 years. And it provided elements of guidance of how to treat people, because they would identify the fact that this person with this type of structure has a certain behavior, and then the person with the opposing structure, if there's such a thing, would have a differential behavior. And so they were looking at what they would refer to as stocky and slender types, which again, if we pull up the finger trap, it's like we've got the stocky and we've got the slender, and so. But what we want to understand is that these structures represent differences in behavior, like based on those constraints. So we can't treat them exactly the same. And this is why differentiating between the two becomes useful, because it actually helps guide our process more effectively. Like could you go through this entire thing and never know if somebody was a wide or narrow? Absolutely, you could. Would it be more work potentially? Yes, it would. And so we're just trying to make things easier because there are tendencies that would be associated with archetypes.
Right. So other things that come to mind are like narrow wrists and ankles, more narrow facial features when it comes to like the angles off of your, and I don't even know what these angles are called.
Facial labia.
Facial labia angles. Sounds dirty. But
it's just, okay, Chris, put your face up near the camera. Put your face up near the camera. And then Bill puts his face up near the camera. And we are not the same. Okay? Now we can move back because we probably scared everybody that's on the video. Right. But well,
Greyhounds versus Bulldogs.
Bulldogs. That is correct. And the lovely Rita is actually snoozing over there, probably snoring, if you could hear it in the background.
Right, because of her wide structure.
She is a Bulldog. She's a Bulldog. She is not a Greyhound. As much as she would like to be a Greyhound, she cannot be a Greyhound no matter what. Right, she is thick, she is wide, and she has a big, giant head.
Other behaviors that we've mentioned many, many times are your wides are going to be a bit stronger, force producers, quicker first step. Narrows are going to be a little more flexible, not as force related, better at endurance, better with momentum.
Yeah, it's like if we use an American football frame of reference, offensive lineman, wide ISA, wide receiver, narrow ISA.
Yeah, just because the needs of that the
absolutely
position.
yeah well or it's just that they gravitate like I maybe there is a guy
right, that's what I mean
the needs of
that position allow them to remain successful through high school, through college, through pros,
and there you go absolutely
whereas normally absolutely. That can get sort of self-selected over time
I think
you know, we're still talking about the extremes. I think one of the main issues, even with seasoned and veteran practitioners, when they're trying to figure this out, is if they have someone that comes to see them that maybe got into an accident and they wouldn't normally be coming for an overuse issue. Those people we call like in-betweeners, who they might not be narrowest of narrow. They might not be widest of wide. Mm-hmm. They're somewhere in the middle. So what we're saying is that the behavior of opening without being able to close or closing without being able to open is going to be a big tell. The behavior of like what sort of ranges of motion they have in terms of table measures will be a big tell. Their athletic history can be a big tell. How they present posturally. So as you look at someone from the side.
Well, we're going to look at stance. We're going to look at stance here in just a minute. Some of the pictures and you'll see. All right. So let's state the obvious here. So this is a narrow ISA, okay? Narrow ISA female, pretty straightforward. You can see some of the shape change that would be associated with the top down compressive strategy. So you can actually see the sternum and manubrium are compressed. So this is a top down compression, which is why we're going to see some of this expanded representation. So this is not an ER of the ribs per se. This is actually the abdominal pressure from the top down that's kind of pushing her away from midline. Now she lays on her back, so that pressure is reduced, but I think it's still pretty clear that if we were, again, we use the dog frame of reference, this is a Greyhound, this is not a Bulldog.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, you just look at the general physical structure of the skeleton and you start, this is actually a very slender human being. The chances of her being a wide ISA are unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a high school athlete, lacrosse and wrestling, but also still a narrow ISA, very broad shouldered individual, but I think it's still pretty clear. And this is a really good representation because we've got the superficial muscle activity that is quite obvious in this circumstance where we're looking at external oblique activity here, influencing the shape of the wide or shape of the ISA, and constraining it. And so again, this is a narrow that would not open. So,
yeah. I mean, if you look at his wrist, very bony wrist, very skinny wrist. You know, the test, I don't remember what this is called. There's a name for it, I think, where you can connecting your fingers around your wrist, but like I can connect my thumb to my pinky finger. And that's going to be pretty like anthropometrically.
It could certainly be useful in certain circumstances. You got to be really careful with some of those because you get outliers that would have like a
big hands,
large hand size relative to their skeletal structure. It might not be accurate. again, you want to compare, you know, multiple influences when you're trying to determine this. Don't rely on a singular entity.
Mm-hmm. Do people, when you talk about like Batten laxity scores, are the people that have more laxity typically going to be narrow?
Yes, because of the ER component. ER. Yeah, like it would. You'll rarely have. Okay, let's take an offensive lineman, a shot putter, a discus thrower in the Olympics or something like that, and bring them in. You will rarely have one complain about, oh, I've been told I'm double jointed or I'm hypermobile or whatever, right?
Because yeah, I'm trying to remember.
It'd be a rare circumstance.
I don't think I've ever had a wide that had a laxity issue.
Yeah, it's like you take a very high level practiced yoga practitioner. It would be rare that you would get a wide ISA that would gravitate in that direction, because number one, it's very difficult to perform those activities at the extremes, and most of the extreme representations are external rotations.
Interesting story. I know of one individual who is wide that's a Pilates mm-hmm. instructor, and she needs hip replacements because she's been, you know, this could be other people in her family have needed mm-hmm. hip replacements early as well. So it could be a congenital thing, but I thought it was sort of interesting that she's maybe asking her body for things that she's not supposed to be doing.
Yeah. It's like every time I hear the term congenital, I always think that from a constraint perspective, it's like congenital would just be like you inherited this structure, you inherited these behaviors,
sure.
and your management strategy over gravity. But this is another obvious representation of a narrow, and you can also see the top down pressure.
Right.
You see the upper portion of the abdominals constraining the ISA into IR, and then we see the abdominal pressure increased near the umbilicus. Mm-hmm. To give you a frame of reference as to what an X-ray might look like, this is actually a narrow ISA X-ray, and so the anterior view is sort of like the dead giveaway, where you have this sort of linear representation of the rib cage. The verticality is there, longer axial skeleton, and then the diaphragm shape would also be associated with the narrow ISA. Okay. A great representation of a wide from a side view to give you an idea of how pronounced this may be. So this is a very wide human being with a magnified breathing strategy. Like if there was such an angle, this sucker doesn't move like at all. So you see a lot of abdominal movement associated with the breath, but you can also see the degree of anterior rotation in this circumstance. But that's a pretty good extreme example that you actually may see. And this is an older gentleman, but very rigid, long history of like high force physicality as well that goes along with this. So you get a lot of, you think about, you know, if you gravitate towards high force production, and you think about like heavy loads and things like that, and you think of the degree of concentric orientation that would be acquired over time, even the intercostal musculature starts to pick up a lot of concentric orientation. So the rib cage becomes very, very stiff in this circumstance. And this is one of those representations. And this is a wide ISA X-ray that you can look at for comparison. And I'll flip back to the other one here real quick. So we see that there's your narrow. There's your wide. And so then we get another frame of reference from a helical perspective as to, you can see that this is the wider helical angle
right.
from a physical structure standpoint.
And you can also see the starting conditions of the, so when we mention a lot of things in passing, mm-hmm. Like we're talking about like tendency to open without being mm-hmm. able to close, tendency to close mm-hmm. without being able to open. Yeah. That is because of the starting conditions that you're seeing with the diaphragm position. In
yes.
these two pictures.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you can see one sits more anterior, one sits more posterior right. in the thorax.
Yep. There you go.
And that space and the starting position creates the compensatory inhale or exhale, which then causes what we're saying, either the uh-huh. behavior to not be able to close or not be able to open.
Yeah. I mean, this is actually representative of a very high force position of the diaphragm. So
right.
for future reference. Okay. So when we start to look at some tendencies of wides versus narrow. So this is a wide ISA individual, female. Right. And well versed in the gym. So she's actually a pretty strong individual. But the thing that I want to make reference to is you look at the way that she stands. And so when we're talking about wide ISAs, we look at the internal rotation bias that we're going to see. And so we're going to see an IR position of the pelvis. You're going to see a nutated sacrum, et cetera, that would also be associated with this physical structure. And so then what we tend to see is that sort of this sort of like straight down paralleled standing position in the lower extremities and in the rear foot. And so this is a really nice representation of that, especially when we take her out of her shoes and she's got to use the ground context. And so we're not forcing her feet into any kind of position using a shoe.
Right.
And then
go back for a second. Uh-huh, so this is a good example of, if you're going to, any of the things that we're mentioning, if you're going to take them in isolation, you might be able to like use as an argument or disprove. But what we're talking about is like the big picture, because if you can, uh-huh. you could argue and say like, oh, well, she has skinny wrists and ankles. And it's like, well, that's not the one thing that you're looking for.
Right.
You're also looking for like how broad the shoulders are, the position of the scapula, the creases in her shirt, how Bill had mentioned, how she's standing within her base of support. Like, these are also going to be tells.
Yeah. The other thing that, and this is beyond the scope of this discussion, I think, is when we talk about configuration, which is it's an inlet outlet relationship in the thorax and the pelvis that kind of screws people up a little bit too, which is why we want to start looking at behaviors and tendencies. And again, like this is a very fit individual, and you look at like, oh, she's got a smaller waist than shoulders. And so that kind of like points people say, oh, she must be narrow, when the reality is, it's like, no, this girl actually is a wide ISA. The other thing that you can see is if you look at the posterior rib cage and you look at where she is expanded, her tendency for expansion, and you can see the right posterior lower expansion to be significantly greater. So this is one of her structural tendencies that we'll see. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. And then big, strong human being right there. Great representation. And then we see the similarity as to standing behavior. So again, this is a bias towards an internally rotated pelvis and thorax. We've got a nutated sacrum. And then we have, again, sort of the wider stance, if you will, to give you an example of how this person is pushing down into the ground with the bias towards internal rotation.
Yeah.
So side by side, we got two narrow ISAs. And if we go back and forth and we look at the differences, we start to see, oh, okay, so we can see some of the differences in the lower extremities as far as standing is concerned. So we see a little bit of a narrower representation of the stance. We can see the difference in the shape of the rib cage, and then we get a difference in the shape of the ISA anteriorly. We also see the tendency that we'll see when narrow ISA gets near the end of the base of support, where they start to pull themselves down to stay inside of the base of support on this right side. So both of these guys are representative of that.
Right.
Okay. Definitely one of my favorite comparisons. So we have a wide ISA individual on the right. We have a narrow ISA individual on the left. You will never, ever see a wide ISA sway back. Okay, so the person on the left will be accused of a sway back posture. And this will be the tendency of a narrow because of their ER structural bias, because of the narrowing of the ISA. So the internally rotated position of the ISA, you can kind of see the tendency of the wide to be more ER'd. This is a very high pressure abdomen that we see on the right. You can see the nutation of the sacrum. But now this is a lot of anterior orientation in both archetypes. We're seeing anterior orientation in both circumstances. It's just that it's going to be represented more as a sway back in the narrow versus the wide. Again, making reference to how we see the differences in stance. So the narrow ISA has a smaller space in which to apply internal rotation into the ground. So the tendency that you're going to see is you're going to see a narrower stance width under this circumstance. So this is someone that is that's actually, as far as the spectrum of narrow to wide is concerned, she is quite the narrow representation. And so, again, if we were to go back and look at some of our extreme wides, we get a big difference in the way we would see this stance. And again, this is just the tendency of how much space that they have available to put the IR into the ground. One of the tendencies that you're going to see with a wide ISA, and we talked about this in any number of places and videos and articles on the network, is their first move tendency is to move back towards the right heel, which unweights the left side. And so then the left side moves towards a more E-yard representation, which is actually upward. And so this is someone that's executing an activity and they're demonstrating their tendency as a wide ISA to be shifting back towards the center. They're shifting their center of gravity back towards the right heel. And then just for comparison, so we can see this is not the same strategy. So these are narrow ISAs. That is a wide ISA moving back towards the heel. This is a narrow ISA pulling down on the right side. Not the same strategy. Okay. Just to be clear. Yep.
One is making a move upwards and one is a relative up because of a downward move.
Right. So this strategy is to stay inside the base of support. This strategy actually takes place inside the base of support. And again, this is the tendency of the archetypes. And again, this is one of the reasons why we want to recognize the differences between the two. Because if you say, they say that this shoulder is going up on the left. Whoops. And then... if you said this shoulder is going up on the left, you would be incorrect. This is actually a right shoulder that's going down. It's getting pulled down on this side. This side is going up. The reason being is because difference in structure, difference in strategy, differences in behavior. So if you're a traditional physical therapist, chiropractor, any kind of movement practitioner that's aware of some of the traditional representations of, like, say, pelvic upslips and downslips, this is actually an upslip on the left, and this is a downslip on the right.
Yeah.
It's not that these are turns. Mm-hmm. So that has to be respected. But if you were to look at the literature as to why they would represent these differences in pelvic orientation, this is why. And then that's why there is a difference. So if you are a traditionalist, and you said, I'm going to treat this like an upslip on the left, you would actually be incorrect. And so you would go through your treatment. You go, I'm really frustrated. I don't know why this isn't changing. If you had treated it like a downslip, you might have more success.
Yeah. And that's really what the point of all this is people can look at this and go, none of this really matters. I treat people without thinking about narrows and wides and I get good results. And that's fine. Yeah. We're not trying to say that, but this is for the people that are having problems. Mm-hmm. They have certain patients or clients that they cannot seem to change whatsoever. Right. And they do all of the same things that they do with everybody else. And it just doesn't seem to work. These are the things we're saying might be the reason why.
Go ahead.
Because someone that's at the end game, someone's at the end of a compensation path, who is end game for a wide or a narrow might look similar. We're showing you why they might look similarly visually. But if you treat both of these people the same, you're going to get a different result because they didn't come from the same place.
Correct. Yes. You could give somebody in Chicago instructions on how to, you know, get to New York or Los Angeles, but they are not the same instructions, but both are going to be leaving Chicago, right?
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Narrow ISA. So a couple of things. So we can look at the stance to give us a little bit of information. And then we also see a similar strategy that we just saw in our two previous narrow ISAs. We see this pulling down on the right side. So this is a top down pressure differential on this right side. So it's not the fact that he has a sad and depressed scapula. It's just the fact that we have more pressure at the top of the right thorax. And so then the gradient goes downward on this side. That's what we're seeing. Okay. And so if we don't appreciate that, then again, we're just going to lead to a little bit more frustration on our part. So this is the opposing representation of what we just saw in the narrow, where we saw the narrow pulled down on the right. This is actually what a wide looks like when they get pulled down on the left. So put them in this forward bend to sort of exaggerate the need to add some internal rotation here so we could magnify this for you. So this is what happens when the wide ISA gets challenged by being at the end of the base of support. And so then they would get pulled down on the left. So where we saw the wide earlier that was going up on the left, this is sort of the end representation of someone that's trying to stay inside the base of support as a wide ISA. And again, this is important because you'll see this represented on the first move in a narrow ISA where the left side would look lower relative to the right. And so if we can distinguish between wide and narrow, we know how they got there. We know where they came from. And so the reverse engineering process then becomes so much easier because, again, we're not guessing as to where they may be. Somebody that's on my favorite humans list, an outstanding baseball pitcher, just gave you this sort of as a representation of how we would see a wide ISA pitcher in reference to his ability to turn. And so you can see here that this is not the best turner in the business. Doesn't make him a bad pitcher. In fact, it makes him a great pitcher in his circumstance. But the way that he acquires external rotations is through orientations. And then he actually has a pretty cool twist in some of the extremity the bones in his arm and his hips that allow him to access these ER spaces that we typically would see. But this is clearly a wide ISA pitcher. So again, doesn't take away the fact that if you are a so-called rotational athlete, yes, he does not rotate the same way as someone that would be tall and slender, but he is still capable of performing at a high level. Sometimes you can look at other features, and so we talk about this a fair amount. And so we have this alternating narrow wide going left to right here. I put these upside down for a couple of reasons. It's because we tend to get used to looking at faces right side up, and so some of the distinguishing characteristics can get magnified if we flip this up and make it just a little bit more. I don't want to say difficult. It's just unusual to see it in this respect, but we can see the linearity in the skull structure and the width, if you will. Again, using facial labia as a little bit of a guide, you can see the compressed nature of the eye sockets and the narrows are a little bit closer together, a little less horizontal in the helical orientation. And then again, you see the mid face is always a great place to go looking for this because it's kind of like looking at the ISA. We're seeing the narrow representation versus the wide here. Pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you need real life examples, there's a really good one. An obvious difference in structure here. We're just looking at archetypes and comparisons. This is one that we wanted to talk about because gotta love the picture of Bruce Lee here on the left. This is after he's been lifting weights for a little bit longer than the original picture on the right, and we can tell that Bruce Lee was a narrow ISA, and no matter how hard he trains, no matter how hard he tries, he's still going to be a narrow ISA in this circumstance. So you can see this while he may look wider, right, by performing the lat spread to impress people on film, it's clear that Bruce Lee is still a narrow ISA. You're not going to make a narrow into a wide. And this is even with a degree of compression, just based on his training history at this point, still looking like a narrow. And then, of course, if we go back to Return of the Dragon, I believe this was these were the two combatants in the Colosseum. So again, Bruce Lee, narrow on the right, Chuck Norris, wide on the left. So even though he doesn't have this big, massive, heavy structure, Chuck was still a wide ISA. which lended to his ability to produce some pretty high force. He was a legitimate in the ring fighter and a world champion.
Yeah, he was a karate world champion.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, taught Bruce Lee a few of the kicks because Chuck was a his foundation was Taekwondo, I believe, and Bruce's was Wing Chun. So there you go. So there's your differences right there.
Yeah, and like we had mentioned earlier, it's like what it people might say, you know, I haven't done any of this, I haven't thought about this anyway, and I've still experienced success. And that's not what we're saying. It's
great.
It's if what we're trying to offer is the people who tend to trip you up or you always have problems with this type of person, it's maybe they need to be approached differently.
Yeah.
If you know where they came from and the starting point and how to reverse engineer it, you might be able to help someone that hasn't been able to be helped by others in a traditional sense, just because they're not being treated appropriately.
You can give the same exercise to a wide archetype or a narrow archetype and be successful. Yeah. However, that success might not be for the same reason. They actually may be acquiring movement capabilities for different reasons. That's kind of what we're pointing at here. It's like sometimes it really doesn't matter how you approach this. And then there's going to be times where it does. And for the times where it does, this becomes incredibly useful.
Yeah. Because if you're going to, if you keep running into the issue of like, this won't stick, or we make great changes in the clinic, but they go home and the next time it's just right back again, then what you might be creating is this sort of, you're forcing them into a shape there and they're not able to retain it because it's not part of their natural behavior to retain that shape or to be in that place.
Right.
You can choose any exercises and activities you want that are going to try to bring someone back within their base of support and teach them how to move within their base of support.
Right.
And that might be enough. Okay. But in a lot of cases, when you have a tricky person coming to see you that has had issues for years, they can't be treated in the same way as everyone else. And you have to engineer this.
We're just respecting the constraints of the individual and then understanding that their behavioral tendencies, right? Not absolutes, but tendencies.
Yeah. So hopefully this helps clear up for a lot of people that are having a hard time determining wides and narrows. The other thing I wanted to mention is sometimes you'll be presented with a referral or someone else will come to you and they'll say, well, this therapist or this person said that this is a wide, or they measured wide with this person. Don't always take that as the gospel of what this person's doing. Ask all these questions, look for all these tendencies. Cause for instance, I've had tall, narrow tennis athletes sent to me and they were like presented to me as from a therapist as a wide individual. So I'm immediately thinking in my head, probably not. If you're in this, if you have experienced success, you're a college D1 tennis athlete, you're probably not a wide if you're tall and lanky. And one more thing before we wrap it up here is maybe we can explain why a narrow might look wide on a table.
Yeah. So the anteroposterior compression of the lower rib cage spreads it sideways. And so when they take a breath, they're taking a compensatory breath. And because of the compression front to back, the only direction that the rib cage will expand is actually sideways. Now, and so we talk about the lower rib cage turning into ER and IR. And this is neither. This is just literally spreading sideways. And so this is why if you're going to measure, you're going to use the ISA as a proxy measure for archetype, this is why you want to do it many, many times on many, many people. So you start to see what these behaviors actually are, like what are the actual options. And then, like I said before, it's like if you're uncertain, you do something and then you follow the tendencies.
Right.
And you may be able to work through somebody and never be absolutely certain as to their archetype. And you can, achieve very favorable outcomes. But again, the the tendencies are gonna help you resolve those problems when you sort of paint yourself into a corner with somebody and you're not really sure. It gives you something to fall back on.
Sure. All right. Nice.
What are we doing for the people that are still with us, Chris?
I don't know. Saying thank you for your time. We appreciate you. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Like, what's your favorite color?
Favorite color?
Yeah. What's your favorite crayon color? Mine for years was brick red.
Brick red.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Crayola commercial with the salmon?
Nope.
Okay, so here you go. So we're gonna test the age of the people that are, and I kind of know what the breakdown is of the ages. So I know that there's probably going to be me and Dale getting this.
Yeah. If Brent is listening.
If Brent's watching, yeah, he'll get it too. So there was I believe it was when the 64 color Crayola box came out with the sharpener on the back. There was a commercial where the salmon, it was actually the name of the color in the box, and the salmon was missing, and so they actually put a fish through the factory, and it came out with the paper wrapper of it, and they put it in the box as a fish. There you go. So that's a test, you know.
So are you saying your favorite Crayola crayon color was salmon?
No, never. Probably black. Actually. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Exciting.
Yes, I know. I like my black dry erase markers. I like my black's easy to match. What can I say?
Yeah. Look, it's true.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right.